Hello and welcome to Minding Kingston's podcast, Mind the Chat. I'm Vicky Bourne, Minding Kingston's Counselling and Wellbeing Coordinator. In this series, we're talking all things mental health with people who have a connection to the borough. Talking about mental health, breaking down stigma is close to the heart of our guest in this edition.
The truth is that it still takes a toll on my mental health, having this condition, but I work through it on a daily basis. Because although I like to try and forget that I have a disability, there are constant reminders, you know, where I have to turn to someone, like just now, you know, to get on this Zoom call with you.
He's Adam Morse, film director and scriptwriter. Capturing the visual is central to his career, and he does that successfully, despite being registered blind for the past decade. His first feature film, which he directed and wrote, was called Lucid and released in 2018. It featured the Hollywood star Billy Zane and other high-profile actors like Sadie Frost and Laurie Calvert.
Have you ever been in a dream and said to yourself, hey, wait a minute, I'm dreaming?
I never remember my dreams.
I can help you. You can go to sleep tonight and wake up and feel completely different about yourself. Called lucid dreaming. Essentially, you're awake while you're asleep.
Dreaming, specifically lucid dreaming, is a central theme in his film.
Just don't see how a dream can change someone's life.
But then Adam's always been a bit of a dreamer. And nothing, not even losing his eyesight, was ever going to discourage his passion for film.
I fell in love with cinema after going to see a showing of Star Wars with my dad. He took me when I was 6 years old to see the remastered version of Return of the Jedi. And I remember that experience affecting me and making me wonder about how it was possible to do something like that, you know, to put that kind of an experience on the screen for people at that young age. And I just became a movie buff from then on onwards and got into a bit of an addiction, really, going to Blockbuster and just reading the backs of the films and building up my own collection of movies at home, starting out on videotape and then DVD.
And was that something that was encouraged at school? Was that something you could explore there?
Not really. To be honest, it was more in my own time. I dedicated it to just enjoying films and watching them and studying them.
But you were interested in acting, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, the closest thing we had was media studies, and that did, you know, look at film as well. I remember getting an A on an essay I wrote about Blade Runner when I was about 14 or 15. And yeah, to be honest, it was always my ambition to work in front of the camera. So at school, I took more of a shine to drama and theatre studies.
And then at 19, your eyesight started to decline. And you were eventually diagnosed with hereditary optic neuropathy. So that left you with only peripheral vision.
That's right, yeah. I left school when I was 18, and then I first started noticing the early signs of my sight loss a year later, at the age of 19, when I was diagnosed with Leber's. And yeah, at that time, I was starting to think about working in production. Because I left school with the, you know, ambition of pursuing acting. I had done some fringe theatre, and I thought that the best chance I would have of finding representation as an actor and showcasing myself was to create my own piece of work and make a film myself, so that I could use that film as a vehicle for myself as an actor. So I was writing a short screenplay when I first noticed that my sight deteriorating.
And that must have come as a complete shock.
Yeah, It was very confusing, because I didn't know that I had I didn't know what was wrong with me. I wasn't sure what was happening, and I remember going to the opticians and them trying, you know, countless different lenses, none of which had any benefit to my sight or removed the small dots that were starting to appear in the dead center field of view. But after the optician suggested I go see a doctor, I saw numerous doctors, professors, professionals, medical experts. None of them could tell me what was wrong with me. They were all taking different various tests, you know, blood work, eye tests, and asking me, you know, personal questions. And
sounds like a very stressful time.
It was. The stress just came from the not knowing. It was the stress of the unknown and the uncertainty around what was happening to me. I wasn't sure the doctors didn't know if I was dying, or they even speculated and said, you know, you might have HIV, or this could be early symptoms of MS. So they were like, you know, just prepare yourself. You might need to be in a wheelchair. So they were filling.
And how long did that continue for, the uncertainty?
months from the start of spring all through to the middle of summer.
Is it a notoriously difficult thing to diagnose, or was it just unfortunate that they took such a long time?
No, it is. I mean, it's because it's such a rare condition. It's one of the rarest eye conditions in the world. And so because they don't have that many patients or references, when they find someone suffering with this, there's just not enough awareness or knowledge about this disease. So, yeah, it took them several months before they were able to diagnose me. And then, yeah, I was registered blind and have been since.
And that's obviously had a massive impact on your life. And I'm wondering really how it specifically impacted on your mental health.
Well, yeah, it definitely took its toll on my mental health and still does to this day. You know, I do give a lot of bravado in the press and try to put out a positive message to uplift other people and hopefully give them some encouragement that they can look at me as someone who's still doing what they're passionate about.
And absolutely.
And
yeah.
On a daily basis, I find myself trying to meditate on the positives, and I do a very good job of that. I recharge myself and I make myself feel good every day, and I want to make other people feel good. But the truth is that it still takes a toll on my mental health, having this condition. But I work through it on a daily basis, because although I like to try and forget that I have a disability, and I do that by immersing myself into my work and my passion, which is storytelling and entertaining people. So, you know, the hours I spend writing or, you know, developing creative ideas, be it, you know, in film, music, whatever I'm doing, everything that excites me, that makes me forget all about the trillions of flashing lights that are appearing before my eyes right now as I talk to you. That is how I push on, and I feel myself every day taking it day by day. But obviously there are constant reminders, you know, where I have to turn to someone like just now, you know, to get on this Zoom call with you. I wish I could do this myself and not pester the people that I care about and feel like I don't have my independence to just do things that other people take for granted. And it's very frustrating, but I don't let it get me down. And to be honest, that's what frustrates me the most, is having to count on other people. But that's life, you know, and luckily I'm a very social person who's not afraid to approach strangers and communicate with people. And I'm lucky in that aspect, I suppose, that I have those skills and attributes that allow me to interact with others. And, you know, in life, we're all in this together, I guess. That's how I like to look at it anyway. And it's nice for me to feel like I can be there for other people in return wherever I can. And promoting my movie that's just been released now, it's given me the opportunity to, well, feel like I'm blazing a trail for other differently abled artists like myself, but also just anyone in the general public and anyone in this global society, everyone in the world that is dealing with their own issue, be it mental, physical, whatever it is. I really take a good feeling for myself whenever I hear a message from someone who reaches out to me and says thank you for sharing your experience and me opening up about my personal story. I know that it's helped people that have heard about what I've done, and that's why now I feel a responsibility to keep being candid and sharing my experiences, and also continue to, you know, to keep working hard on achieving my goals and turning my dreams into reality, because that's hopefully going to pave the way for other people to do the same.
But you obviously didn't disclose your visual impairment at work for a while, did you? And I wondered whether that was due to the discrimination that people with disabilities often face.
Of course. I'm still skeptical about who I share this with, because unfortunately we're living in a time right now where disability still has this extremely negative stigma, and it's not just work related. Even outside of the professional arena, you know, when I speak to someone and if they clock on to there being some kind of an issue with my sight, then straight away I can feel the change in atmosphere. And that's not with everyone, but there is still a lot of people that seem to find it awkward, or, and for me, you know, it doesn't need to be, but I've done my best over the last 10 years readjusting to living with this condition, and that means faking eyeline to be social, or navigating a space with confidence to make other people feel comfortable, not just
sure,
myself.
Sure.
And that might sound strange, but
adjusting more for them than they might do for you.
Of course, it's for myself as well. But equally, I feel like if I fit in with the crowd, with everyone else, then it doesn't raise those eyebrows, or I don't want to force, I'm not looking for sympathy from anyone. And to be honest, I think that working as an artist and doing what I do in the visual medium of film, I know there's some irony, attached to that, but exceeding those expectations, the expectations that are laid upon someone like myself, I feel like if I can continue to surprise people with what I'm capable of, then hopefully it'll make this less of a talking point, which I understand it is right now. And I'm grateful that I'm having these opportunities to speak about who I am and what I'm doing. But it really is the end goal that in the future, people aren't really interested in talking about disabilities and achievements, because it'll just become the norm. It'll be normal.
And that differently abled artists will be taken just as seriously, or, as you say, it wouldn't be a major feature of their talents or what they've achieved.
Yes.
Because your latest film is a psychological exploration about lucid dreaming and how this helps the lead character to overcome social anxiety. And I've read that that's autobiographical. Is that true?
Yes, it's largely autobiographical. I mean, all of the central characters' experiences are my own. I mean, for the most part, it's a portrayal of what I went through as an adolescent, learning how to lucid dream, keeping my dream journal, working in a car park.
Those teenage jobs that everybody has.
Yes, and, you know, the unrequited love, well, infatuation. And so, yeah, all of those experiences, I tried rolling them into what is now,
an amazing film.
An 84-minute picture about how one can use their subconscious mind to reinvent themselves and also reimagine their reality in waking life.
How will I know that I'm in the dream?
Why do I need it?
How do you know that this is not a dream?
Signore!
I just don't want to sail through my life not knowing what's real.
Don't get too cozy, Sam.
Elliot, I want to live in the real world again.
Because lucid dreaming, that will be a new concept for some of our listeners, I imagine. Can you explain a little more about it?
So lucid dreaming is the practice of controlling your dreams and being aware that you're in a dream. It's fast becoming a real big centerpiece in popular culture right now.
Mm.
And it's actually been scientifically proven to be very therapeutic for people suffering with mental health issues.
So it's different from visualization, isn't it?
It's similar to visualization. You know, manifestation is sort of a part of it, really. But when you go to sleep at night, you experience something called a REM cycle. You have multiple REM cycles, and that's basically where you dream. And they last anywhere between half an hour to an hour and a half. And the REM is your rapid eye movement. And that's when your subconscious is projecting images and you're seeing dreams. And, you know, you have a few of these a night, and that 30-minute or 60-minute dream could feel like 6 hours, because your perception of time is completely warped while you're in a dream state. And before you actually cross over into the state of sleep, you experience a state called hypnagogia, which is basically where you are on the borderline of being awake and asleep. And, you know, you tend to have like a twitch, you know, like a sleep twitch,
as you wake up.
Exactly, where or you drift off and you fall asleep and you go back under. And that's usually a moment where, if you're meditating or manifesting visualization, you see something, your subconscious will usually take you to that place or take you to that person, and then you can experience it. But it's all about looking for the triggers and planting seeds in your mind so that they can be a catalyst for you to actually have that moment where you become lucid and that you realize that you are actually in a dream. And then usually the natural reaction for your subconscious is to kick you out. It's like, right, you know, you've discovered some kind of a secret, and it's like, no, you can't look behind the curtain at what's going on here, and then you wake up. So the real trick is trying to get a handle on staying in the dream after you become lucid. And step one of that is to look at your hands, and that's something that Elliot, the character that Billy Zane plays, teaches young Zell in the movie. And there are a number of techniques that are passed on to Zell in the film, which are all usable for audiences. So it is sort of a beginner's user manual in how to lucid dream, but I don't want people to think that it's going to be a full-on tutorial, because it's not. It's not a documentary. It's not a teach you how to lucid dream film.
But it's a glimpse into the possibility, and it's certainly something that could interest a lot of people. And
absolutely, it's a good starting point.
Life-changing for some of them, like the central character.
Well, that would be a huge bonus, because for me, the first intention with making the film was purely just to create a piece of entertainment for people. But if it can give audiences an education or an opportunity to reflect on their own experiences in life and motivate them to make a change in their actual lives, then that's, yeah, more than what I could have hoped for the film.
Because it ties in so much with the, you know, your belief that nothing can stop us from making dreams come true. That seems to be your philosophy, and that really underlies that film, and the message comes across very clearly. I wondered if you could say a bit more about that and how it relates to your own journey.
Absolutely, I do feel that way. Part of me writing the film was not only me reflecting on my previous experiences as an adolescent, but also thinking about who I am today and who I want to be in the future. I really like who I'm becoming, because I feel with each passing moment, I'm actually more and more ambitious. And it's like a relentless growth that is just out of anyone's control. And it's been, you know, dampened by rejection and discrimination along the way. But I've not let it stunt me, in the sense that I still back myself and believe in myself to do more than what other people expect of me. And so when it comes to me dreaming about the future, I do feel a profound sense of precognition in the pictures that I see in my mind and what my subconscious shows me. And then ultimately, what seems to, you know, manifest itself around me in reality.
Well, your story is certainly an incredibly positive one, and I'm sure that will be a really strong message to a lot of people out there, because, you know, you've overcome so many barriers and managed to follow your dreams, which is just wonderful to hear about. I gather you still live locally, and I just wondered whether you could say something about living in the local area and what you particularly enjoy about it and how it's treated you.
I mean, I was born in Kingston Hospital, and, you know, it'll always be a very special place for me, because it's where I grew up, and it's still where I do a lot of my lucid dreaming, actually, you know, around
there.
And
are there any particular favourite places to go that you've appreciated, for instance, during our recent lockdown period, or we might have more coming up?
Beverly Park has always been a very special place to me, because usually when I, you know, find myself lucid dreaming, it always either starts there or at Holyfield, the school I went to. These just seem to be the recurring stomping grounds for my subconscious, I think, because I spent so much time there in my waking life. And yeah, I'm always going to be, you know, a proud Kingstonian, and always have a lot of love for the borough and the area, and the affinity will always be there for Kingston.
I was speaking there to the film director, Adam Morse. Remember, if you need any support for mental health issues, do seek help. And if you're enjoying this series from Mind in Kingston, why not subscribe and leave us a review wherever you usually download your podcasts? It helps us to spread the word, and hearing how others have coped may well help someone else. I'm Vicky Bourne, and until the next edition, take good care.